Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. I'm Natalie Rios, and today we have with us learning designer Liz Hartwell from Sponge UK, who will be discussing her experience designing training and focusing on what the learner really needs and wants. So welcome, Liz. Thank you very much for being here with us.
Hello, yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, thank you for joining us in this interview. So to begin, Liz, could you please tell us what you do?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So yeah, I'm Liz Hartwell. I'm a learning designer at Sponge UK. So as a team of learning designers, we work together to produce a range of different learning solutions for our clients. That could be anything from traditional e-learning to games, mobile learning, interactive video. There's a whole host of things that we design and write as a team.
Okay, that's great. And when you say all types of, you know, learning experiences, how does the client require that learning experience? Do you recommend to the client, okay, this fits better with your needs, or how's that process?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's a mix, to be honest. Sometimes clients come to us with an idea in mind of what they'd like. And we can obviously advise on that. So some clients come to us with a clear need for an e-learning module or a game. And then we also have clients who come to us who know their business need and their learning need, but they're not so clear on the solution. That's when we come in to really consult with them and advise on exactly what type of solution would best fit their needs.
Okay, that's great. And how did you decide that? I mean, what's your process when you're developing the training or the learning experience? I mean, what's your approach, and how do you go from talking to the client to designing the learning experience? If you can just tell us a bit of what the journey is for you.
Sure. So at the very start of the process, there's definitely an element of discovery. We're trying to find out exactly what the client needs in terms of their business requirements, the learning gaps in their organisation, and also crucially about their learners as well and the target audience. So we spend a lot of time working with our clients to research those things and make sure that we have a really clear understanding of exactly what they need. And it's only once we've got those details from them that we can go away and create a learning design solution for them, so a recommendation. And that recommendation is really built upon by our team. It will ultimately be transferred from some ideas to a tangible storyboard or script document, and then ultimately we'll go into our production team to be developed and built. So it can be a short process or a long process, completely depending on the client's timeline. But as I said, that first part, that discovery session where we're really trying to find out about the client requirements is the most important one, because it forms the foundation of the whole project.
Yeah, I imagine. But since you have a way of capturing the client needs and requirements, but for you it's really important to center the experience around the learner. So how do you capture the learner needs? Because you have the client and you have the conversation with the client, but then how do you know what the learner, who the learner is going to be, and how to capture what they really want and they really need?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's one that we continually ask ourselves to make sure that we improve on the ways that we can do this, because you're right, we have conversations with our clients and they are often very informed about their audience, but that's different to meeting the audience themselves, that we rarely get an opportunity to do that. So what we have are these almost like a toolkit, a set of tools that we use that are integrated into our process. We use these tools with our clients to find out about our learners. So, for example, one of the tools, a really useful tool that we use, is a learner persona. And we actually create this an image or a persona of a target user, including their day-to-day role, what they want to achieve from the e-learning, what they want to get out of it, and also what they don't want to see in the e-learning as well, their sort of their hopes and fears around the whole project. So we actually give this persona a name, a job title, and we fill that in with the client, so the client can see as well this really meaningful image of their target user. And we can keep that in mind throughout the entire project, which is really useful for that because it informs everything from the way we write a course to the images selected, the navigation techniques. It gives us a really full picture of what the target learner is.
Yes, exactly. And is that what you call empathy mapping? Is this something different?
Yeah. It's very similar. Okay. We actually have a separate tool for empathy mapping. So our learner personas, from our perspective, are fairly practical. So they're focusing on the job role, the do's and don'ts in terms of what the learner wants, and how we can fulfill those needs. Empathy mapping is almost a more holistic approach, and it's really trying to, as you might expect, empathise with our learners and step into their shoes. So we're asking bigger questions with our empathy mapping. So what does this person think and feel? What do they say? What do they do? How can we make this e-learning a positive experience for them, and a useful and helpful experience for them, based on what we know about them?
And have you encountered that you need, for example, something more that includes more active learning or interactive elements? I mean, have you captured with these personas and building this doing this empathy mapping? Have you come across like, okay, we need to go on this direction or try this type of learning more than this other? What's your experience with that?
Yeah, I mean, really, the possibilities are endless from what you can get from these tools. So one good example is we can ask questions around learners' experience with authoring tools and whether they've tried different types of e-learning in the past and their experiences with those. So that might, for example, mean that we recommend a more traditional navigational approach, or it might mean that we find out that these learners actually all have smartphones in their business and they would be really happy to take learning on the bus to work or on the train. So it really can help shape our solution. And certainly from a content side of things as well, particularly with empathy mapping, we can find out exactly how the learner feels about certain subjects. So, for example, compliance. Has this learner had to take this compliance subject once a year, every year for the last 5 or 6 years? And if that's the case, how does that impact how they'll feel about this next project? And how can we make this new experience engaging and make them enthusiastic about a topic that they potentially might not feel that great about at the moment? So it really helps us dig deep and find out exactly what they need.
And talking about engaging audiences, engaging the learner, have you ever done any scenario-based training, like simulation and problem-solving around realistic scenarios and this type of training experiences?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of scenarios forms a massive part of what we do, regardless of the tool that we're using, whether it's Storyline 2 or an interactive video with a full-blown interactive scenario. As a learning design team, we really believe in the power of realistic and relevant scenarios to help engage learners with content and really help bring content to life. And that's another area that with something like our personas and our empathy mapping that we use, we can dig into one particular role within an organisation. So, for example, you might have managers within a company, And we do an empathy map specifically for those managers. So what are their thoughts and feelings and hopes and fears? What do they need? And then we can also do the same process for supervisors or people working in an office in that business and working in a factory in that business. So it really helps us understand that within one business, there are so many different roles and environments that people can be working in. So bringing that back to scenarios, it means that we can develop these really rich scenarios that are relevant to specific roles. So learners feel like the learning experience is really tailored to them. So they're not asked to do something where they feel, okay, well, you know, this might be relevant to someone who works down the corridor for me, but in my role, it's pretty useless.
Yes, exactly. It's a little bit of making it more personal or personalized in a way, and making it relevant for what their role is.
Absolutely, and not only is that more helpful from obviously a learning design perspective, if you see something that's more relevant to you, then you're going to be able to apply that in your day-to-day role, but also it helps get learners buy-in from the very start, we feel, if we engage them and we show them, like, yes, we understand the situations that you're in day-to-day, we understand the challenges that you face, and the more positive aspects of your role as well. It can obviously just really help sort of engage people right from the very start.
Yes, exactly. To making them feel like this is relevant because I'm relevant in this training, in this learning exercise. Yes,
I think that's really powerful. Yeah.
Exactly, empowering them as well.
Yeah.
Now that you mentioned these different roles, I wonder, this is just a question that came to my mind, have you ever designed any team-based training, like having people collaborating in a team and having different roles to play and this sort of experience?
Yeah, we've definitely developed training on subject areas that are quite large, say, for example, compliance. But within that compliance area, there might be three or four different roles, and those roles will have different responsibilities. And so, for example, managers will have a much higher responsibility than people just working on a factory floor. So what we can do with the help of these tools that we use is develop these scenarios, and learners can branch off into the specific role scenarios that they want to. And we can bring them back together at any point for content that is relevant to all, but they have those areas where they can go and realise that, yes, this content is exactly relevant to me.
Yeah, to what I'm doing and what I need to learn. That's great.
Yeah.
One question that I think is interesting is, have you seen any difference between what the client wants and requests from you and what the trainees want? I mean, is there a conflict or do you find it very smoothly? I mean, what's the experience? Have you ever had any difficulties?
I wouldn't say there's ever really been a conflict as such. I think clients are very keen to work with us to create learning that's targeted for their learners. They understand the need for us to do that.
Yeah.
But I do think they need our help and the tools that we use to see that clearly. And because we use these tools with our clients and they can actually see these tangible personas, these learners, that can really help bring learners to life for them and sort of re-engage them with their target audience. And once they've got that picture, it gives us the arguments that we need to really be able to shape our solution. So it makes our role easier as well.
Yes, of course. So they for what you're saying, they are really receptive to your solution. But Do you feel like they want to innovate, or are they a little bit reluctant to be innovative in the training area and in creating learning experiences?
I think our general experiences are that clients are very receptive to innovation. because when we propose it, it's always to add value, and it's always got a really strong learning design ethos behind it. We don't innovate for innovation's sake.
Yes, of course.
If you see what I mean, it's because it's based on what we feel learners need.
Yes.
Sometimes our clients can come to us with ideas about perhaps things like structure or look and feel of a particular solution, and we can work with them to explore their audience, and sometimes those initial ideas get completely transformed based on what we find out about learners, and it can help us create the right solutions for clients.
Okay, that's great. So what improvements do you think there could be in the way training is done right now, in your opinion and your experience?
I think for me, it would go back to how we connect with learners. We're doing a lot at Sponge at the moment to push that. But I think as an industry, we can and we should really continue to develop and improve the way that we make those more meaningful connections with learners, because sometimes they can still feel almost like an abstract concept. We, you know, for example, we rarely get to meet learners. So if as an industry we could push more towards having things, for example, opportunities to meet learners or conduct small focus groups, both before a solution, so to inform what we propose, and also afterwards as well to get their feedback so that we can continue to improve what we do here at as a learning design team.
Exactly, because I was wondering if you had a way of measuring or just going back to the learners and see what was effective or what needs to be changed. Right now, do you have a way of doing that or
We do. We have we can conduct learner surveys after a course to find out how engaging the content was, how relevant. So there are ways of measuring learner responses. But really, in terms of measuring the success of a course, it depends on the specific client and how they want to do that.
Okay, of course. That's really good. What is your personal vision of the future of training? What do you think is going to happen? What's the next step?
That's a very big question.
I know. But I don't know if you have like a vision. Okay, this has stopped working. I think we should move towards this type of training, or I don't know. Is there anything that you feel?
I think really there are two things. One, I would like to see us continuing to innovate in the technology that we use.
Yes.
So, for example, our interactive video and 360 video, and opportunities as well to progress into the field of virtual reality and augmented reality are really exciting. So I see that as a big part of the future of learning and learning design. At the same time, I'd also like to see our industry sort of fill in the gaps that we've missed along the way to get to this point. So, for example, learner surveys, making sure that we get really consistent, measurable results out of every project that we do. And being able to build on that, I think, is really important as well. So, those are the two things that I think are most important.
Yeah, to respond to the learner and their experience. And I think it's really, really good what you said about the technologies, because now we see, like, for example, the success of Pokemon Go and, you know, the buzz about virtual reality. And I mean, that's what people are consuming. That's what's entertaining. So I think there's we need to think of that, what people are doing and what people like, and how to include that in learning experiences. So I agree with you.
Great,
point. Yeah.
We need to be making the most of those opportunities, definitely.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Well, Liz, that was great. I mean, I think listening your experience and listening to your process, to the way that you design these learning experiences, is really useful. And I think our listeners will find it really, really interesting. And hopefully they will go and create engaging experiences as well. So, if you'd like to share with us how people can find you online and Sponge as well.
Sure, yes, yeah. If you want to know more information about Sponge, you can go to spongeuk.com, or we're SpongeUK on Twitter as well.
That's great. I will include it also in the website, so you'll be able to find Leaf and Sponge. So, well, that's all. Thank you again for being, you know, available for the interview, and it was great talking to you.
No problem at all. Thank you very much for having me. It's been really, really nice.